Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Communication Strategies to Improve Diabetes Self-Management in the Clinic and Beyond, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Stephen Edelman, MD. Dr. Edelman is a professor of medicine, Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes and Metabolism, University of California, San Diego, Veterans Affairs Healthcare System, San Diego, California. Dr. Edelman has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Abbott Laboratories, Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, LifeScan, and Roche. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Abbott Laboratories, Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, LifeScan, and Roche. Dr. Edelman does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Edelman does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to increase clinician competence in counseling patients and caregivers about the impact of proper blood glucose monitoring and to improve understanding of blood glucose readings and optimal diabetes self-management. This activity is supported by Bayer Healthcare. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello, my name is Steve Edelman. I'm a professor of medicine at the University of California in San Diego. I serve as the founder and director of Taking Control of Your Diabetes, which is a not-for-profit organization, and I also work at the Veteran Affairs Medical Center. Today, I'd like to discuss the role of self-monitoring of blood glucose and communication strategies to improve diabetes self-management in the clinic and beyond. In this interactive activity, we will use polling questions to explore your level of understanding of blood glucose testing. You will also see me interact with patients as we demonstrate best practices in speaking, counseling, and addressing barriers to successful use of blood glucose monitoring to guide treatment. Now, this is me in 1970 when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I had all the classic symptoms, thirst, urination, weight loss, etc. And back in 1970, this is what I had available. There were no glucose meters. There was just urine testing. I was put on one shot a day in the morning, NPH and regular. And the A1C test was not even discovered yet. So you can see how our tools have improved greatly over the past 30, 40 years. This slide shows several home glucose monitoring devices that are available right now to your patients. The purpose of this program is really to take the best advantage of not only the numbers that come from these devices, but also some of the software that you can get from each of these meter companies. I'd like to ask our first polling question. Approximately what percent of your patients with diabetes have an A1C value of 7% or less? Now, how are we doing in the United States in terms of taking care of our patients with diabetes? This slide shows the percent of patients whose A1C is above or below certain levels. And just to summarize, we're doing better. We have slightly above 50% of the population with diabetes having an A1C less than 7, which is really a good target range. But the bad news is almost 50% is still above that range. And so we still have a lot of work to do. And I do believe home glucose monitoring will play an important role in improving these numbers. Why do we go through the hassle of trying to reduce our patient's A1C? It's basically proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the lower the A1C, the lower the risk of microvascular complications for our patients with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. For every 1% drop in A1C, no matter which level you start at, we get a 37% reduction in microvascular complications, eye, kidney, and nerve disease. Now, this slide shows the relationship between the estimated average glucose and the hemoglobin A1C value. First of all, this is a great slide to laminate and use in your clinic to educate your patients what the A1C actually means. And once again, in the lower left-hand corner, you'll see a formula that you could actually use anytime you like. If a patient's testing quite frequently, you look at their meter, and you could actually estimate what their A1C would be if you actually had that value. Now, the hemoglobin A1C is one of the most important tools we have in clinic because our patients can't test their blood sugar every hour for 24 hours for 2 to 3 months. So this gives us a fantastic idea of how they're doing over the past at least 2 months. However, it only measures the average, and this slide just shows that your patients can have blood sugars that are extremely high and extremely low, and the hemoglobin A1C may be appropriate. Also, since the hemoglobin A1C goes back 2 to 3 months, you could have a patient with really poor control 3 months ago and great control the past month, and that person's A1C would be the same as an individual who had great control 3 months ago and really poor control over the past month. And that's why we have self-monitoring of blood glucose, which really complements the hemoglobin A1C values. There are advantages and disadvantages, and we'll be talking about this throughout today's program. It gives immediate feedback, and that's really important to see what a particular type of meal does to a patient's blood sugar, what type of exercise lowers the blood sugar the most. And I believe, and I think others believe as well, it's a very important empowerment tool. It tells patients how they're doing and how their medications are working, and it gives them the knowledge that their diabetes is under good control or maybe not so good control. When you look at data, we know from the type 1 study, the DCCT study, and the famous type 2 study, the Kumamoto study, that home glucose monitoring was instrumental in patients using insulin, no matter what type of diabetes they've had. One area of controversy has been the value of home glucose monitoring in patients with type 2 diabetes not treated with insulin. However, several recent studies, including a meta-analysis of 8 randomized clinical trials, have shown the benefit of home glucose monitoring in non-insulin treated patients. And lastly, a large longitudinal cohort study demonstrated clearly that there is an association between higher SMBG frequency and improve glycemic control. Self-monitoring of blood glucose can give our patients a lot of good information and can tell all of us how our therapeutic strategies are working. For a patient testing at home, it tells them when they may need to see their doctor sooner. For example, if someone's doing great, they notice high blood sugars in the morning popping up all of a sudden consistently, their next appointment may not be for 2 or 3 months. So they could get on the phone and say, hey, I'd like to be seen sooner, or just ask for a call back. It tells us and our patients if the medication's working. It tells us about weight loss, activities, stress, and other things that may affect our blood sugar on a day-to-day basis. And it can be a very powerful self-modification tool as well. And this slide is simple, but it brings up a very important point. We can argue about the value of home glucose monitoring all day, and you can look at studies pro and you can look at studies con. I think this is the real issue. If we teach our patients to test at the right times, that give us practitioners an idea how their diabetes is doing at home, I think it could really improve diabetes care and make your office visit much more efficient. In this next segment, I'd like to introduce you to two of my very favorite patients, Renee and Dee. Renee has had type 2 diabetes for over 20 years. When Renee first came to see me, her A1C was over 11%, and she was not checking her blood glucose values at home. Let's see how things have changed. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Dr. Edelman.
How you doing?
Good.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
How are things going?
Oh, really good.
Let's go over your medication. Okay. Then I want to focus in on your diabetes and go over your lab results. So you're taking metformin 1,000 milligrams twice a day.
Correct.
And you're taking the insulin glargine at night. Now, my records say 20 units at night. You still on that dose?
Correct.
And you're taking exenatide before breakfast and dinner?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Now, how are your blood sugars doing?
Actually, they're doing well. I'm still looking good in the morning. Every once in a while, they'll go up a little bit. So I'm expecting the A1C to be really good today.
Okay. Well, your A1C is not bad. It's a little higher than last time. Oh. Typically, it's been 7.1, 7.0, and this time it's 7.5.
Oh, really?
So it's a little bit higher than last time. Okay. Now, are you testing your blood sugar regularly like you used to be doing?
Oh, absolutely. I'm checking my blood sugar every morning.
Now, Chance, do you have the download for your meter, the software that shows all the blood sugars on the computer?
No, I keep my meter and make sure I check, but I'm not downloading.
Let me take a look at that. Now, your number's looking pretty good.
Right.
111, 104, 94, 153, a little higher, but mostly, I would say, sounds like 95 to 120 most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, now here's one that looks a little bit higher, 381. Were you sick or what was going on there?
No, Dr. Edelman, that's from a long time ago. That's a memory for me to remind me remember when I started, I was in really bad shape. And it's just something to say that I'm really doing well and to keep up the good work.
Well, you remember when I first saw you, your A1C was above 11.
11, right.
And, you know, I remember seeing you, and you were not even testing your blood sugar then. What was going on in your life back then?
Well, you know, what happened was because I'm a diabetic and had been for 20 years or so, I just felt like I knew what I was doing, that if I eat the right foods, if I exercise the way that I should, that my body is doing what I think it should be doing. But I found out that was totally incorrect, that you have to check your blood sugars.
Yeah, and your numbers, when you did start testing, once you saw me, were 250, 350.
Well, that's why now you'll see I don't skip days.
Yeah, no, that's so important. It's such a good message. You know, I really need you to help me talk to some of my other patients because you don't feel that bad when you have type 2 diabetes, and it can go unrecognized for a long time.
Right.
Now, when your A1C was really good, testing once in the morning, I was happy with that because I use that morning test to adjust your bedtime insulin dose. Mm-hmm. But now that it's crept up a little bit, and once again, you know, nothing to feel bad about or panic, I want you to test a little bit more frequently so we can find out what time of the day your numbers are creeping up. Because your A1C is a little higher and your morning blood sugars are good, you know, you have to be bouncing up a little higher some other time of the day.
Okay.
And who knows? It might be after breakfast. It might be after lunch. It might be at bedtime. So what I want you to do, you're going to test 4 times a day for 3 days in a row. As best you can, before breakfast, lunch, dinner, and bedtime, you'll record those values. They'll also be in your meter.
Okay.
And even if you have a meal that's not exactly at the right time, just do it before the meals. If you have to skip one, that's fine too.
Okay.
And we want to look, I want some trends. That's why 3 days in a row.
Okay.
I won't be having you test 4 times a day forever, so don't worry about that. Pick the days that are more typical for you.
Okay.
So we can pick your daily schedule.
All right.
And then what we'll do is we'll contact each other either by phone or email, and I know you prefer email.
Right.
And then we'll go over the results.
Okay.
And try to figure out what the problem is. Now, who knows? Your blood sugars may be perfectly fine. This just could be an aberration.
So I'll do that. That's a great idea.
Any problems with pricking your finger a zillion times?
No. In fact, I love that meter where you just stick it. It's fine.
Well, that's good. You got over that barrier.
Yes, I did.
So. All right, Renee.
Thank you, Dr.
Hey,
Edelman.
Good seeing you. And then once you finish those 4 days of testing, 3, 4 days, then send me an email and we'll discuss.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
All right,
take care.
Ya.
All right. Bye-bye.
This slide shows the goals for glycemic control put forth by 2 large diabetes organizations. As you can see, one says less than 7, A says less than 6.5. I think the bottom line is get the A1C as low as you can, as long as you can do it safely, without disrupting the patient's lifestyle. And I think both of these organizations would agree with that. And you can see the levels for fasting and postprandial. They're a little bit different. But the bottom line is you have to give your patients individual goals that fit their age, their duration of diabetes, their presence or absence of heart disease, and their susceptibility to low blood sugar. And that's why we need to individualize these goals. Now, what are the recommendations for self-monitoring of blood glucose? For any patient on insulin, the American Diabetes Association recommends 3 or more times a day. For people with type 2 diabetes who may be on 1 shot of insulin a day and or oral agents, it's up to you. Some patients who have a great A1C, no hypoglycemia, may not need to test that much. Others with more complicated diabetes, blood sugar is not under control, you may have to ask them to test more frequently. And it's important that we really educate our patients on how to do the test, do it properly, and get the most out of it. This slide shows variables that affect glucose values. I love this slide because everyone thinks it's just diet and exercise, diet and exercise. But if you look at this slide, there's a lot of things that can affect the blood sugar. And things around in that red square, we have everything from time of a day, exposure to cold, caffeine, menstrual periods, allergies, all kinds of things. So it's no wonder that when we get a patient that's dependent on insulin, that the blood sugars really bounce around, even when the patient is trying to do their best, following their daily meal plan and exercise program as religiously as possible. That's why education is so important. This is just a slide of an example of a patient education book on how to interpret their own self-monitoring of blood glucose. There's a lot of good ones out there. You may have developed your own, but I think the key point with this slide is we have to educate our patients. I tell my patients that I want you to test your blood sugar for yourself primarily, and for myself as the caregiver secondarily. And I think education is the key. It's so important that we tell our patients how often to test and what time of day, because you can't tell every patient, test four times a day, come back in 3 months. They'll get discouraged. A lot of those numbers may not be of value to you. So it really depends on what regimen they're on. And I'm a big believer in asking my patients to think about their numbers first, get some ideas of what they think is going on, and then when they come into the office, first thing I'll ask them is, what do you think about your blood sugar values? This slide illustrates a great example that reminds me of Renee's case. The A1C is 8%, meaning that the estimated average glucose is 183. But if you look at the fasting blood sugars, that certainly they're a lot lower. It just tells you the blood sugars are becoming higher other times of the day, giving rise to an elevated hemoglobin A1C. So I would ask this patient to test 3-4 days in a row as frequently as they can to find out what's going on. And here are some of the results. As you can see with this patient, when they tested almost 4 times a day for 4 days in a row, you can identify the problem in a split second. They're getting high after dinner and going to bed high. And so when you think about the possible remedies, whether it's changing the composition of their dinner, if they're eating too many carbs or too many calories, to spread their calories out, you may need to adjust their medication, and you may need to add or increase fast-acting insulin at dinner time. So it really depends on an individual patient, but the point I want to make here is you can identify the major problem right away. If there's more than one problem, I always fix the major problem first. So how to get the most out of your self-monitoring of blood glucose? I think it's important to collect the information and really encourage your patients to bring their logbook or their download or their meter to clinic. If you have a secretary or a nurse that reminds patients the day before about their appointment, they should also say, don't forget to bring in your glucose values. That's key, because I can't tell you how many patients forget their blood sugar values when they come to see me in diabetes clinic. I ask the patients right away how things going. You might as well get those questions out of the way early versus at the very end of your visit when you got to get to the next patient. And really ask your patients to analyze their own numbers. I think that's really important. Once you find a trend, sit down with your patient, agree on a plan, whether it's lifestyle or medication, make sure they understand it. I like to write things down too. And then find out when they're going to come back, but also reinforce the best times to test for that individual patient. Not all patients need to test 6 to 8 times a day. It just depends on what medication they're on or what type of meal during the day they're having the biggest problem with. Now, there may be situations where you have to increase the frequency of self-monitoring of blood glucose. And this is just a laundry list, everything from acute illness to pregnancy to problems with the A1C, too many highs, too many lows. And I think this is an important list to keep handy because depending on the insurance plan or the healthcare system your patient is in, if they're not on insulin, you may need to test more than the limited number of strips allowed for that patient. And these are good reasons why you could ask for more test strips. Now, a couple other things you can do with your patients. Testing in pairs. This is important, testing pre and post meals. This is just an example here. I love this example because you can see that when this individual ate two cinnamon rolls, not one, but two, their blood sugar before and after was the greatest difference. And your patients may not always reach their goal of their postprandial blood sugar, but I like the difference because you might start off at 180, and if you end up at 240, that's fantastic. That's only a difference of 40. And this allows patients to see how their insulin's working and what different types of food do to their blood sugar values. Now, the other area that we saw in the prior example is structured episodic testing. This is where you would take a patient and say, over the next 3 to 4 days, I want you to test 7 times a day. It may be less, it may be 4 times a day, before and after each meal and at bedtime. And even though a patient may not be testing that much normally before and after, it really gives a fantastic view of what's happening over 3 or 4 typical days. So they've studied episodic testing, and compared to traditional logbooks, primary care physicians really preferred this structured testing much more, and it allowed them to really focus in and identify a problem very efficiently. In fact, 77% of them changed the way they manage their patient, and I like that other bullet point that 93% of the participants, the patients that involved in this study, agreed with their caregiver. Now, if a patient agrees with the changes being recommended, I think the persistence, adherence, compliance, call it what you like, is going to be a lot better. Now that we've discussed the recommendations and role for blood glucose monitoring, I'd like to know approximately what percent of your patients with diabetes practice self-monitoring of blood glucose on a regular basis. This slide comes from a study that looks at patients using self-monitoring of blood glucose and shows that only 40% of those individuals were actually doing it properly and doing it enough for clinical management. Now, there are barriers to self-monitoring of blood glucose. Pain, no one likes to prick their finger, but there are proper techniques and there are improper techniques to make it more comfortable for your patients. It's inconvenient. However, the new meters are small and easy to use and easy to hide in your purse or your pocket. And of course, there's the cost. We know glucose strips aren't inexpensive if you don't have insurance. So that's why it's so important to define how many times a day or a week your patient should test and at what time. Patients need to do it properly, otherwise the value doesn't mean anything. And I think motivation, that's an important part. There is lack of motivation. This is one of the most important barriers. And I think it boils down to giving patients instructions on what to do with the number. If you had diabetes and you tested your blood sugar 4 times a day and it was always above 200 4 times a day and you didn't know what to do with the number, you wouldn't test either. You get pretty frustrated. So I think it boils down to education. So how do you increase enthusiasm? I think really this slide just shows a laundry list of items, but I think it's really important to go over with your patients the best times and frequency and how to respond to the number. That's key, whether it's lifestyle, whether it's medication adjustment, or if it just boils down to, if you see your numbers high at any particular time, please give me a call and don't wait to your next appointment. Now, this slide reminds me to talk about continuous glucose monitoring, another important technological advance for patients on insulin. This slide shows 2 blood sugars, both about 65. One situation, it's dropping, and that can be pretty dangerous, especially if you have a hypoglycemic reaction while you're driving your car, taking care of your child, working in a high place. The other situation, the same blood sugar, but you're going up dramatically, and that's not quite as dangerous. So one limitation of home glucose monitoring, it just gives you a snapshot of your blood sugar. It doesn't tell you what direction you're coming from. It doesn't tell you what direction you're going. Now, continuous glucose monitoring has improved the way we take care of primarily people with type 1 diabetes. This is a slide showing 9 patients with type 1 diabetes. Look at the average A1C, below 7%. That's pretty darn good. But the blood sugars on the blinded continuous glucose monitoring devices shows that these patients' blood sugars are going from 40 to 400. And I think this is an issue for any patient on insulin. It's the variation and fluctuation of blood sugars, especially the unpredictable changes. This slide shows 3 continuous glucose monitoring devices on the market. It's important to note that these devices are not as accurate as home glucose monitoring devices, and you still have to ask your patients to test with their glucose meter to confirm before giving themselves an insulin dose, whether it's in between meals or at mealtime. And these devices will get cheaper, they'll get more accurate, and they'll become more available. This is the one important study that you need to know about when it comes to continuous glucose monitoring, and has led to the reimbursement of these devices in a much greater level than it was 1 or 2 years ago. It clearly showed that in a group of patients with type 1 diabetes of all ages, if you use this device 6 out of 7 days a week, it'll lower your hemoglobin A1C, and what's not shown on this slide, it'll also reduce the amount of hypoglycemia. Now, as I mentioned before, D is one of my patients with type 1 diabetes. He does not use a continuous glucose monitoring device, but does pretty well testing his blood sugar at home with a glucose monitor 5 to 7 times a day. His A1C is excellent. Let's see how my visit with him goes. Hey, D.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you again. How are things going?
Great, yeah. Been real busy, but kind of slowing down this week, so I'm glad we had time to meet.
Business doing well?
Doing really well, yeah.
Okay, good. Let's get into your diabetes. The one thing I noticed on your labs, your A1C remains really good. It's a little lower than normal, 6.2. Mm-hmm. You know, and very few patients get that low. So, and that's awesome. That'll help reduce your chance for complications for sure. Mm-hmm. But one question I have is that because your A1C is really, really quite good, almost in the non-diabetic range,
right.
My main question for you is, how many times are you testing your blood sugar? Mm-hmm. And are there any issues you're having? Are you getting low at any particular time? Or?
You know, I'm still kind of like normal testing, like 5 to 7 times generally, usually around meals, or I'll test additionally if I feel low, or sometimes when I feel high. If I get really high, I'll test just to see how much insulin to take, you know.
Now, do you have your meter with you? Do you download the data? Do you have any numbers for me?
No, but I have my meter, you know, but, you know, I don't download the numbers, but I have my meter, so you can probably take a look.
If let me see your meter. Let me ask you this. Is there a reason why you don't download? Because, you know, I know you're kind of...
No, I mean, you told me about this before. I just have never gotten around to setting it up and doing it. I mean...
You know, Dee, I know where you're coming from, and I certainly can empathize. You know, you check your blood sugar a lot, you react to it, and you don't think there may be any trends, but sometimes when we look at the numbers, we can actually see some things. And, you know, you're a computer savvy guy. In fact, some of these views that these software programs have are quite easy. Mm-hmm. Average standard deviation. In fact, let me show you something that you may or may not have noticed, but take a look. It looks, I can just take a snapshot look. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at these quite frequently, but I can just tell you're getting low a lot right before lunch.
Right. Yeah, that could be I changed my workout routine, now working out at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm often low after my workout.
Let's talk about how we can maybe fix that. Mm-hmm. If your morning blood sugars, they look pretty good. Mm-hmm. If I said, let's back off on the insulin glargine at night, your morning still may creep up too high.
Right.
So, you know, you're not on the insulin pump, which is fine. You're on a multiple daily injection. So the Lantus dose, I think, looks pretty good. But what about cutting back on the fast acting? You're on insulin aspart in the morning. Mm-hmm. Have you reduced your insulin at all? What's happening?
No, I mean, basically I eat the same thing for breakfast, but I really haven't started doctoring with the short acting insulin yet. That's probably something I should explore, especially on workout days, cutting back a bit.
Well, the other thing, too, is I noticed you've lost a little bit of weight. You look good.
Thanks.
And that was on purpose, I take it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's impressive, you know. And remember, you know, when you lose weight, you know, you become a little bit more insulin sensitive.
Right. Well, I've definitely cut back my glargine dose to about half what I was before.
So I think that's the main thing, you know. I just want to reiterate, your A1C is awesome. But, you know, the thing we need to really try to avoid is the hypoglycemia, the low blood sugar.
Right.
So I think that's the only time that you're getting it consistently. Mm-hmm. So I think the download is quite helpful. I'll print it up, and I'll give you a copy you can take with you.
Great.
The other thing is, you know, all the rest of your cholesterol level's great. Your blood pressure was awesome today. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think you've been to the eye doctor, so your health maintenance is up to date.
Good.
So
excellent.
Thank you very much, and
good
seeing you.
Make sure
you make another appointment for 3 months from now.
Well, we'll do.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve.
I'd like to now ask the next polling question. When recommending a glucose monitor, which of the following features is most influential to you? Now let's talk about computerized diabetic management systems. In general, I have become a real believer in this because I have been able to pick up trends and areas of concern that I might not have if I was just scanning through a logbook or a patient was saying, yeah, I tested frequently. I never downloaded because I didn't think I would get any more information out of it. And you saw what happened with Dee's case. We picked up hypoglycemia after breakfast on a regular basis. You have to get the software. You have to make it downloadable for your patients and your office staff, depending on your situation. And the information can be faxed to you by the patient. They could be emailed to you, whatever system works for your practice. And so it's important that you get the download and then know how to read it. And you'll find the best readout sheets that work best for you. Let's look at a couple. Now, when you use a data management system, you have to make sure the patient's meter's date and time is set correctly. And the information could be invaluable. It'll tell you the average frequency of testing at each particular time of day. That's important. It'll give you the mean values. It'll give you a percentage of values above and below a target range that you've set for that patient individually. And very importantly, it'll talk about the standard deviations. Let's talk about the standard deviation a little bit more. It basically represents how much bounce the patient is getting around the mean, how many highs, how many lows, and how wide that fluctuation is. And there's a general rule of thumb that if you multiply the standard deviation times 2, it should be less than the mean for that particular time period. And the other issue is you have to look at how many times the patient has tested for that particular time, because if they only tested 2 times, it doesn't really tell you too much. It's really at least 10 values or more, and the standard deviation can give you a value of how much fluctuation there is. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, it comes down to lifestyle, different size of the meal, different composition of the meal, different times of the day, exercise, missed meals, other medical conditions like gastroparesis, patients who are not taking enough insulin. So this is really up to you to figure out why the standard deviation is so high in a particular patient. It's a very important number. This is just an example of a data analysis, and you can see this slide shows the blood sugars before and after breakfast, and it goes through the mean, the standard deviation, the highest value for that time period, the lowest, and you could really take a look and find out what the average is before a meal, how high they're bouncing after a meal, and determine if it's appropriate. So these downloads are going to be very important for you to make your office visit much more efficient. Now, when we talk about logbooks, there are issues with that, and I can just tell you that the list of excuses why patients have forgotten their logbook when they come to diabetes clinic is incredible. And the bottom line is they either have not tested and they're afraid to tell you, or their numbers have been excessively high and they're afraid to tell you. And so you have to set up a good doctor-patient relationship where you tell them it's just a number. It's no reflection on your personality. You know, you want to just help them get their diabetes under better control. And a lot of patients falsify their numbers out in the waiting room. And if you've never seen it, or if you've never picked up a patient faking their logbook, then I guarantee you, you've missed it. And you've got to get into that a little bit more carefully. Here's a illustration of one of the downloads, a standard day. This is the one we looked at when we picked up Dee's frequent hypoglycemia before lunch. This is not the same readout, but you can see that in a nutshell, you can see their blood sugar readings, you can see how much the standard deviation is, not only see the numbers, but also look at the actual calculations below and the high and low for that time period. And I guarantee you that you'd be able to pick out the single highest time of the day or the time of the day that has the highest standard deviation in about 10 seconds. And just focus in on that and say, hey, I notice you're getting high after breakfast every day. Let's talk about that. You know, how much insulin you're taking? What are you eating for breakfast? You know, is there anything I can help you with? And I think that's key. You may not be able to fix the problem on the first visit. They may have more than one problem. So you got to really pick the major one. Now, this is a download showing the electronic logbook. I love this. It takes exactly what a patient would log in their book, except it makes it in legible form. It color codes it so you can see the highs, the lows, the ones in the correct range. And it gives you the calculations at the bottom, the mean, the standard deviation, the high, the low. It's incredibly easy to read. You know, compared to flipping through a logbook, or they may not be recorded at the exact time. A patient testing a lot may get tired of putting every number in it, and sometimes there's food and blood smeared all over the logbook, and you don't want any of that as well. So how do you use your values? I think this is just a general slide. You know, when the fasting blood sugars are high or low, you got to look at the basal insulin at night or other medications they're taking, and depending on if it's high or low, what kind of snack they're getting, how late they're eating their snack, what's the composition of that snack, or if they're maybe inactive or overly active at night if they have a graveyard shift type of job. Before meals, it's typically a combination of exercise, what they ate for the meal before, and if they're on fast-acting insulin, giving them the correct dose. And then, of course, 2 hours after eating, it's pretty much the same as the before next meal test. You got to look at what they're eating and how much insulin they're taking. And then at bedtime, of course, it's really a reflection of what happens at dinner time for most patients. So you have to look at the numbers, the time of the day, and try to dissect out what the main issue is. Now, the other issue of home glucose monitoring relates to picking up and preventing severe hypoglycemia, where a patient may require the assistance from others. If someone has hypo unawareness, that's important. Those patients have to test a lot more and get a continuous glucose monitoring device if they have the means to get one. Basically, the risk factors include having diabetes for a long time, and you also have other autonomic issues as well. And typically, after having diabetes for 10 years, patients start losing their symptoms of low blood sugar. For example, when you first get diabetes, when the blood sugar gets below 70, you may get shaky and sweaty. But then after 10 years, you may not feel abnormal till you're below 60 or 50. And I have some patients that their first symptom of low blood sugar is passing out. And that's, of course, you know, one end of the extreme spectrum. But hypoglycemia and avoiding it is key. And thank goodness D was testing his blood sugar quite frequently before lunch, and we picked up those lows. Now I'd like to know how you would answer this question. In your clinical practice, what do you feel is the most common barrier to compliance of self-monitoring of blood glucose? To get the most out of your home glucose monitoring for you and your patients, you know, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place. Once they fall into place, it's quite easy. But patients have to know that you have to store your strips properly. They have to stay within those airtight containers. That's really important. I had a patient that brought in a can of Altoids, empty can of Altoids, and they had their glucose strips in there because they liked that flat holder. And that wrecks the test, and it's not going to give you an accurate value. You have to make sure that the strip code on the container matches the code on the meter. Now, some meters, you don't need to set a code, and that's important. And you can see the data on the right that a lot of the patients walk around with miscoded meters. That gives you inaccurate values and may lead to an inaccurate insulin dose. Insufficient blood, no control solution, or out-of-date control solution, out-of-date strips. So basically, there's a laundry list of things. And I think this is a good time to mention our local certified diabetes educator who may be there to support your patients, whether they're part of your practice or not. It's an important profession that can help take time and effort off of our visits to really get into the nitty-gritty detail with your patients. So to summarize, to get the most out of your self-monitoring of blood glucose, you have to really establish a profile for your patients. Do you want to have them test before meals, after meals, bedtime? It really depends on that particular patient, their lifestyle, and their therapy. Then you have to figure out the best format. Do you want them just to write it down in a logbook? With Renee's case, since she was only testing in the morning and her A1C was great, that really wasn't a big issue. But as her A1C drifted, we wanted to get blood sugars at other times of the day, and that's when the downloading could be quite helpful. And we saw how helpful it was with D as well. So you got to find the format that works best for you, the easiest readout, the one where you can pick up the issues very fast. And lastly, you have to develop a plan. And please spend the extra few moments going over that with your patient and asking them if they understand. I know we're all busy, but sometimes we assume patients follow us when actually they don't. This is a great example of patterns. I love this example because this is a patient who has done extremely well Monday through Friday. But look at Saturday and Sunday. They're getting pretty low most of the day. And guess what? This person exercises on the weekends only. And I think this is a nice pattern to pick up and reduce their medication on Saturday and Sunday. Or maybe if they're not overweight, allow them to have a little extra carbohydrates. So in conclusion, self-monitoring of blood glucose should be optimized to produce the most useful information for you and your patients. Home glucose monitoring empowers your patients to take control of their diabetes, and you can save time with patients in your office and get the most out of that limited visit. Thank you for participating in this CME CE activity. To help us assess the effectiveness of this educational activity, please take a few moments and read the following cases and complete the questions that follow. To proceed to the online CME test, click on the Earn CME Credit link on this page. I'm Dr. Steve Edelman. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Communication Strategies to Improve Diabetes Self-Management in the Clinic and Beyond. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.